This is the October 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jim McCormick. He's at agmarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Greg Johnson joins us from Champaign, Illinois at TGM, Total Grain Marketing. And Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. That's bluereef.ag, bluereef.ag online. He is in Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org. I think we have quite a bit to talk about this week, gentlemen, but let's get a list of items from each of you that we might want to discuss. Jim McCormick from agmarket.net, we'll start with you. What's on your list?
Well, I say probably the two big talking points that we probably need to talk to about is the, you know, the China deal of the President Trump's tweet earlier in the week about trying to meet with Xi in 4 weeks, and then Scott Bessett's comment earlier, you know, this week about maybe a soybean bailout for the soybean producers here announced next week. And then we also probably need to talk about the ramifications of the quarterly grain stock report that was released earlier in the week.
Greg Johnson from TGM Total Grain Marketing, what's on your mind as you're taking a lot of crop in, I suppose, at the elevator?
Yeah, and I think that the yields that we're getting probably need to be discussed a little bit. And is that general across the Midwest, or is that just kind of isolated to certain areas? What in general are we hearing? And then not only on the supply side, but then the demand side, you know, what will we see as far as demand to offset these big crops when it comes to ethanol exports, for example, and or soybean trade deal with China. So we've got both the supply side and the demand side to talk about.
Nothing, by the way, until we get the government back to work, and probably delayed until we see the supply and demand tables, that is, from the World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates. We'll get back to that in just a bit. Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, what's on your list?
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been discussed so far. I think something that's kind of hit my radar screen here just recently, the last day or two, are we starting to see some money flow changes from the funds now that we're into a new quarter? You've seen some big moves in the metals, some pressure in the livestock markets, and some strength in the grain. So are we seeing a little bit of money flow change compared to what we've been used to over the last, you know, three or four quarters in here?
Well, let's pick up there. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about that? Where do you see the money changing hands at mostly, and is it flowing into or out of the commodity markets?
Well, that's the question, Todd, and I don't know if it's outside market influences. I'm not sure if it's the government shutdown. Obviously, the comments and the tweets and comments from President Trump about supporting soybean farmers might be supporting the grain markets. But I've just noticed today, especially, you know, the metals markets, you know, pushing up into new all-time highs here recently. They're under some heavy selling pressure. The cattle market obviously is in a 2.5-year bull market. It looks like maybe some shine is off of that, the strength there, and they've been aggressive sellers there. And you've had some nice buying across the entire grain sector here. So I don't know if it's new money coming into the commodity markets necessarily. I think it may just be the start of some shifting maybe from, you know, assets or commodities that they have a lot of profits in, and maybe coming out of some of these, short grain positions that they've got profits in as well. Maybe they're just taking some money off the table with the uncertainty of the government shutdown and some geopolitical risks out there.
Well, they could be taking money off the table, Jim McCormick, and that would push the market higher as they were changing their positions. Or they could be pushing money into a safe haven. Sometimes the commodity markets are considered that. That does turn my attention to the trade deals that President Trump is trying to negotiate, particularly in agriculture as it's related to China. Well, what do you think about the prospects 4 weeks from now as they turn their attention really to soybeans, I suppose? many other things, I would think, as well when they meet.
Well, I think it's definitely going to be a talking point. I'm a little bit suspicious anything's actually really going to get done. I do think President Trump is feeling a lot of heat from the farm base, plain and simple. Especially there was that very famous picture, I guess you could now say, that Brooke Rollins had sent a text over to Scott Bessent complaining about how the potential deal to help bail out Argentina. Then Argentina came in there and fire sold a bunch of beans, up to 40 cargoes of beans to China. I think it kind of painted President Trump into a corner where he felt like he had to say something to calm the market down a little bit, or the base down a little bit. But the reality is, when you look at this, Todd, he's talking about doing that at the APEC summit, is at the very end of October. But if I'm the Chinese, I got to be honest, why would you cut a deal before that? Because we have the big Supreme Court ruling, or not ruling, but essentially case that's going to be argued on November 5th, that these tariffs that President Trump has put on, if they're even legal and if he can even do that. So if you're the Chinese, I would argue they're probably going to wait and see how that tariff case plays out before they really make any other kind of concessions to President Trump. And I think that could happen to all these Asian countries. I mean, there's a lot of hope that as he goes to the APEC summit, he can lock down some of these deals. But, you know, are these countries going to be a little bit hesitant just to wait to see if he actually has the power to do the deal that he's actually doing? So we'll see.
Greg Johnson, have you been following this along and some of the things that Bessent has said about the potential of a tariff soybean bailout, relatively speaking, might come on Tuesday of next week? Sometimes it sounds from the administration as if, well, I should say, take this back. I don't think that any time from the administration that it has sounded as if they're really willing to go down this road, that the president has said, and generally if he says it, it is something that it gets done, that tariff taxes will be used to pay soybean producers. We'll see whether they can actually pull that off or not, I suppose. And then Bessent always sounds a little hesitant as to how much that might come to producers. And I'm just wondering from each of your perspectives what you're thinking about that, Greg, and maybe you should start.
Yeah, I think we need to keep in mind how this all started. President Trump imposed tariffs on China because he was unhappy with their fentanyl production and lack of willingness to curb that. So he put, trillions of dollars worth of tariffs on Chinese products. I mean, not trillions, but that's what China ships to us. Everything that's basically in Walmart comes from China. So, you know, the quote is, you know, while this is important to U.S. agriculture, we're talking billions of dollars with a B. But when we're talking about all the goods that China ships to us, we're talking about trillions of dollars with a T. So China does have reason to come to an agreement, but obviously they want those tariffs taken off, or at least reduced to something manageable. So I think that is the big key. We have to remember, I think China would have no problem buying soybeans from us, agreeing to buy soybeans from us, if the tariffs on their products get reduced or eliminated. So, you know, that's the big picture. And, Trump in the meantime can, you know, hand out some of that tariff money to soybean producers, you know, no problem. But, the big picture is, you know, will China take off the tariffs on U.S. soybeans? And the answer is, in my opinion, yes, but not until the U.S. takes tariffs off of the products that China ships to us. So it's all back into that court of when do we take the tariffs off of, or at least reduce the tariffs on the Chinese products?
If the Chinese impose a 20% tariff on U.S. soybeans, a 15% tariff on any corn that they might, and they have not, either, actually, imported from the United States, Chip Nellinger, and it's all tied up with the Ukraine-Russia war and crude oil coming out of Russia as well, because there's a set of tariffs that the president, we could bring into this, but the president has imposed and has been watching. So all these things on the global stage are working into this, and I'm just feel like it might take way longer than November to come to any agreement. This would be the fifth round of talks, if I remember what Mr. Besant had to say about the set of trade deals. Do you think they can get it done?
I think they can get something done, but I agree with you, Todd. I think that's way out in the future. It's not an inconsequential issue for the farm community and producers out there. But in the big picture, I agree that the soybean situation, the entire crop of soybeans is a drop in the bucket when you talk about all these interrelated issues and the amounts throughout the world global economy. The other thing that scares me and has for quite some time, in Trump's first term, easy to get a deal there that included beans because we're in the second year of a Brazil drought, coming off a record production there. It looks like they're set to, plant a record amount of acres again. And very quickly, if you push this into January, you're on the doorstep of what looks like could be another big Brazilian bean crop, and they're going to get their supplies from Brazil anyway. So, I think it's an uphill battle. I don't think it's impossible to see a deal, but will it be soon enough to keep this rally going? I'm not quite so sure about that, but certainly the comments earlier in the week did a lot to, put a floor underneath these markets, especially the bean market.
And Jim McCormick, to stay with this topic for just a bit, the FarmDoc team, the agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, very early in, I think, the summer, suggested that if there were ever a bailout for producers like last time around, that given prices and what the expectations were over the long run, that this would simply serve to hold up the price of inputs and might not be the best of ideas in general across the board, putting pressure on a marketplace that might not really, unless there is something different than an agreed to amount, that tariffs actually come off and trade resumes in some other form, just might not be the best option for farmers in America.
Well, I think that is kind of the common consensus. I mean, if money does flow, now how the money is going to flow, Todd, I think we got a government shutdown. There is no money right now to bail the farmer out per se. We got to remember the first go around, they use the CCC Corp's money to essentially fund, that first round of Trump money in, 2018 or so. That has no money in it right now. So this is what we need to be watching as we renegotiate to just get essentially the economy open or the government open. And then maybe the long-term funding, that's going to be a key of what's out there because, the Democrats are going to have a say on how much money does go into the CCC. So how much money does go in is still up for debate. But I agree with you, the economists, that for the most part, this money is going to do just like we had an injection of money last year in the late winter time. Most of that money went right into the farmer's bank and right from the bank and went right back out to, the seed dealers and the lenders. And I'm guessing that's what's going to happen again when it's all said and done. And, it's just in general, the cost of inflation is right there. And when you push money into the system, it's just like the stimulus checks that we gave people during COVID. When you just hand people money, you're essentially encouraging inflation instead of pulling money out of the system, which is really what we need to do right now. The M2 money supply is at all-time highs. And that's part of the problem we're seeing right now.
These are all outside market influences. Let's turn our attention to the fundamentals of the marketplace. We'll start with the quarterly stocks report. And Jim, I'll stay with you because this was on your list. Can you tell me about that report and how you viewed it?
All right. Now, when you looked at it, the corn number was the big case. They did that slight revision of last year's crop, raised it by 25 million. I think the big thing I'm looking at right now was that revision and the residual, the feeding residual number, dropping it dramatically, around 170, 180 million bushels. Because when you look at that feeding residual for the old crop, Todd, compared to the current estimate of the new crop, obviously you haven't got the new crop balance sheet, it's about a 600 million bushel increase from one year to the next. And in my mind, it's impossible that we're going to feed 600 million more bushels of corn to livestock this upcoming year because there's less livestock to feed. And I've always thought that feed and residual number was too high. Remember, Todd, they cut the feed and residual number back in January of a year ago and never touched it for the next 9 months. Yet back in January, we did not know that that border was going to be closed for 9 months. So there's no way they could have accounted for it. So the adjustment they made, I believe, this week was right. But what happens is they're going to put that bigger carry-in forward into the new crop. They're going to have to adjust down the feed number eventually. And I'm in the camp with a lot of people. This corn crop is probably going to shrink back from the current yield estimates. But I fear that as they shrink back the yield due to the disease and dryness issues, it's just going to be offset with lowering of the feed number, raising of the carry-in, and we're still going to be hanging around a 2 billion carryout, which just unfortunately is not a bullish number.
Okay, Chip Nillinger, when you put those numbers together, it really was the corn number that was bearish, the bean number not so much. It was not that different than most, I think, had expected. Can you tell me how you viewed it and what you think that means going forward?
Yeah, I think Jim's spot on. The question is, how fast do they drop demand going forward? It's usually not, a one-off. Usually it takes them several reports to get that done. I thought it was a bit of a disservice in August anyway to raise demand by 650 some million and then another 100 million in September, just because of this fact that when the crop shrinks, then they have, the dial to dial back demand and, kind of take away some potential opportunity. So I agree with Jim. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be hard to have a wildly bullish number, but yet, our exports are good. The demand side is still holding in there, it looks like. And I think that people may be a little surprised in the end result at maybe how low these corn yields can go. I mean, this disease and the dryness and tar spot and southern rust, it decimated a lot of yield this year. And so, to me, it's just the combination of how fast they drop yield versus how fast they drop demand. Still think it could mean we could at least see a period of time where the funds get out of their shorts in corn, maybe get flat or a little bit net long, but it probably doesn't mean we're going to see $5.50, $6 corn this year.
So, Greg Johnson, because it is highly unlikely that the USDA, even if Congress were to come back and the federal government were to be funded, will be releasing its monthly report on Thursday of next week. That's when it's actually due for an update of the crop production and the world ag supply and demand estimates. I'm going to ask you to be our USDA day today. You wanted to talk about yields and demand both. Let's start with the demand side, and then you can build in the yields, please.
The plus side to the demand equation is that the ethanol exports continue to be very strong. So you could make an argument that that number will stay steady. But I agree with everybody else. The feed and residual number needs to come down. The only reason it went up was, so that they could lower it later on. When they, when they raise the yield, they raise the demand so that they don't get the carryout too wildly bearish. But now that, I assume yield is going to come down a couple of bushels based on everything that Chip said, the disease pressure in Iowa and some other states that got crops planted late and were too wet early and too dry late. But still, the bottom line is you can lower the yield by 2, 3, 4 bushels. But if you lower the demand side of that equation, you're still looking at a 2 billion bushel carryout. So the bottom line is the upside potential is limited on the futures market. Now, if you've got bins, you can lock in that carry and you can lock in a pretty good price for, March, April, May, June, July. But if you have to haul it to the elevator and pay storage charges, you're going to give most of that back. So there's really not a good way to take advantage of it unless you have your own bins. And I have been cautioning farmers to be realistic. A 2 billion bushel carryout, we're probably going to plant less corn next year, but with a 2 billion carryout, we can get by with less corn. And the last thing is this new world screwworm is moving closer and closer to the United States, and it's affecting the Mexican cattle crop right now, which reduces demand. And what happens if it would happen to make it into the U.S.? So, more of a black swan type thinking ahead, but we don't want to get too carried away. I mean, I do agree that the yield is too high, but we can come down 2 or 3 bushels. But the bottom line is the demand is going to come down a little bit too. And so the upside is probably limited on price.
Jim McCormick, are you getting enough objective yield data that you can make a good guess that we're off 2 bushels from where we are? That would still be a record yield, by the way. But and I don't know whether producers what they're thinking about the size of this crop. So fundamentally, what are you hearing about yields across the Midwest and where there are good yields and where there are substantially better than what they expected kind of yields, if there are those places, or, you know, the kinds of yields maybe that they were expecting early in the year, and where there are some holes in our yield maps?
I mean, there's definitely coming off. I mean, I talked to a client of mine just outside of Indianapolis today, and he said, look, you know, there was areas up there that they thought late July, early August, that corn could do 240 to 250. It's coming in 220 to 230. Is he disappointed? Yeah, because it wasn't 240 to 250, but 220 is still a pretty solid crop. And I think that's kind of where at. If you're my guess for a yield, I would say it's going to be somewhere right around 183, maybe 184. I'm not in the camp that it's going to be below 180, Todd. It's just the statistics of it all. If you take the current yield that the government's working with and you lower the state of Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas, if you lowered every one of those states' current estimate by 10 bushels, your national yield would still only drop to 179.2. And we're not going to drop all those states 10 bushels. Some are going to go down, I believe, but some are maybe drop a little bit. So I'm in that right around that 183 level. And unfortunately, at 183 is 1.5 billion more bushels bigger than a year ago. That is a lot of corn that we've got to deal with. And on top of it, the best estimate we have, Scott, right now, Todd, is maybe 15% of the corn crop's been sold and 15% of the bean crop has been sold. That's it. So there's a lot of corn, a lot of beans that have got to be harvested, yet that still have to be marketed.
Okay, so for each of you, and Chip Nellinger, I'm going to start with you. This is probably not an easy question to answer, but in the last time we had a federal government shutdown, it lasted 35 days, I believe. Well, it should have gone over two WASDE reports. I think it went over October and November, honestly, if I remember correctly. October tends to be a bad month for the financial markets, so that might be something you would want to consider. But the marketplace was lost. I do recall that, and without direction. So here's the question. Where do you think the market is trading today? And does that float point going through the month of October, or through the next 30 days, let's call it that, does that offer an opportunity or not for producers to make cash sales or a sale of some sort for corn and or soybeans, given what you think eventually USDA, once we do have a report, will show?
Yeah, that is there's a lot to unpack with that question, Todd. I do think it's a problem that we don't get the October report. It's a real problem if we don't get the November report, because then the next time they do, you know, objective yields is January. And so I do think that the market's trading right now 185-ish, maybe 186. I think in the end result, I've done the numbers. I disagree a little bit with Jim. I do think maybe that we're in that 179, 180, just maybe not even as good as a year ago, or just slightly better than a year ago. Will they ever say that? And I'm not saying they would have said that on the October crop report either, you know, but by January, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get it down really close or slightly under 180. I still think it's the range, though, you know, regardless of whether there's government shutdowns or crop reports. If you do see rallies up to the top end of the range, you know, back towards 430 or above in December corn, higher if you're, you know, have on-farm storage and carry, I think you got to be a seller. I think in the same breath, don't get, you know, too worked up if we get down towards the bottom end of the range between 4 and 410. I think there's good value down there. Beans, same thing, because of all the uncertainty we talked about earlier with the you know, the China-U.S. trade deal, will it happen? Won't it happen? Does it take too long to happen? That you get pushes back north of 1050 on November beans, and then, you know, obviously better than that with the carry in the market. Yeah, you have to be a willing seller. And, you know, I think we're still in that range. And you're right, without government reports, particularly the October crop report, is such an important report every year anyway. And to not have it this year with all the uncertainty and questions about yield is really going to leave the market, you know, clamoring for information and in a big black hole.
Okay, Greg, I'll pick up with you. I have an information blackout. What opportunities does that bring, and what issues does it bring? Same question that Chip just answered.
Well, the good news is lack of information should translate to volatility. We should see higher highs, but we could see lower lows as well. So if the perception is negative, we could go lower than what you might think otherwise. On the flip side, you know, as Chip said, maybe, you know, there's people out there talking 179, 180. Let's let them talk that up. And if they can, you know, translate that into buying into the market, that's going to give farmers an opportunity to get corn sold at better prices than if the government would be in operation and come out and say, no, it's 183, 184. So I think there could be some volatility here, but, you know, you have to, you know, pick your points. And to me, 2 billion bushel carryout limits the upside. You know, we're at 420 December corn. Maybe we can get to 435. I don't think we need to go much higher than that. The carry will do most of the work beyond that. And in soybeans, we're at 10 and a quarter. Could we go to 1050? Yes, but I don't see $11 beans in the equation. So this uncertainty, this government shutdown might give us a chance to sell crops a little bit better than if the government was open. And I think we need to take advantage of that.
I'm pretty much close to agreement with Chip. I mean, I've been telling clients, hey, you got the long-term trend line off your February high and your April high. That converges pretty much right at the 200-day moving average around 439. You get up near that level, these corn up near 430, you know, 435, 439, sell it or sell the carry, definitely, if you're going to use your bins. I would agree, you get down near $4, you probably don't get too nervous about it. I think you try to maybe use that as an opportunity to re-own it. I do want to make one stat, Todd, that just bugs me a little bit. I mean, recent history is we bottomed the market early, just like we did last year in August. We bottomed in August this year. Our partners over at JSA did a study, and they're looking at it, and they said, historically, when you produce more corn than you consume the year before, where supply is up 103% or above the previous year's demand, like it looks like it could be this year, 80% of the time, 8 out of 10 years when that's happened, you did not put the fall low in until late October into the November timeframe. So there is a historical bias that in these big crop years, we don't hit that absolute fall low late in the year. I hope that doesn't happen, but there is a little history that says maybe that's what happens as we try to find a home for this final chunk of grain.
And I will turn my attention back to you, Greg Johnson, in the elevator system. We have talked a lot about basis coming into this fall and what the potential issues were, given the size of the crop that we thought was coming as late as August, particularly in the Western Corn Belt. I see that, at least at my grain elevator, basis has tightened up by 2 cents in the last couple of days. What is basis telling you about what's happening out west?
Basis is telling us that the farmers are being stubborn and not moving the grain into the marketplace. They don't like the flat price, and so they're trying to sock away everything that they can, which in the short run is supportive to the basis. But is it supportive to the futures price? No, that's a question of supply and demand. So the fact that the basis is getting better just tells me that farmers aren't selling corn. They don't like to sell at these prices, and they'd like more. Maybe they'll get another 10, 15 cents, but that's probably about it. And they probably should reward the market if we do go up another 10, 15 cents from these levels.
Yeah, I know that elevators have been hunting for corn and calling, right? So with a... You're hauling in, we'll give you this much above. We'll give you a quick shipment premium of some sort. And I don't know whether I want to call it a quick shipment, but it's because farmers simply aren't selling their corn, and you're telling me they should.
They should here in another 10, 15 cents. I mean, we've rallied off the 390 D slow. We're up 35 cents off of that low. You know, it's still not a great price, but it's 35 cents better than where we were on that August 12th crop report. If we go up another 15 cents, that's 50 cents off the August low. At some point, you have to ask yourself, how much is enough? And there, you know, at that point, there's probably just as much, if not more, downside potential than there is upside potential.
All right, let's get a final word from each of you. Jim McCormick at agmarket.net in Barrington, Illinois. What's your final word for the day?
My final word for today is, you know, we're going to be flying blind a little bit here until the government reopens. It probably, as the group said, it's going to provide some volatility. If we do get that up for momentum, potentially do not be afraid to lock it in. The reality is, even if this crop gets smaller, the demand's probably going to be adjusted lower. A 2 billion carryout does not argue bullish corn prices back up to five. You got to be realistic. Same thing with beans. Until we get a China trade deal, beans are going to struggle as well.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing at BlueReef.ag online in Morton, Illinois. Your final word.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of pessimism out there. So I just remind everybody, like Jim said, there's going to be some volatility here. There's probably going to be things, you know, outside market related that we can't even think about right now that add some volatility. So don't take your focus off these markets. I know input costs are high and it feels like prices are in the tank right now, but there's going to be some opportunities ahead. You got to have a plan, be ready to sell when you get the opportunities. It could happen quick, but certainly don't stick your head in the sand because there will be opportunities over the next 90 and 120 days.
Then Greg Johnson from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, at the elevator right here in Champaign County, Illinois.
It's not too soon to look ahead to the 2026 crop. November soybean futures are 1070 on the board. We would love to have 1070 for this year's crop. If we get anywhere close to $11, remember that Brazil is expected to produce 6.5 billion with a B, billion bushels of beans this coming year. The U.S., for reference, is at 4.3 billion. So another 2 billion bushels more than what we produce is what Brazil is expected to produce. So keep an eye on the November 2026 bean futures.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Jim McCormick, Greg Johnson, and Chip Nellinger. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.